This is Mike Corey from ESPN, and you're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
What is going on, Pirate Nation? Welcome in to the Sports Objective. We appreciate everyone tuning in whenever and however you're watching or listening, whether it's YouTube, Facebook, or pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. You can find us for the next half hour or so. We will be talking East Carolina Pirate football, and very excited to be joined by a first-time guest and a friend that I met back during the 2021 season up in Annapolis. Welcome into the show, Jason Tindall. Jason, appreciate your time this afternoon.
Hey, Bubba, thanks for having me. Big fan of the podcast and excited to talk Pirate football with you.
No doubt. And, really enjoyed our conversation during the 3 or 4 hours of tailgating up in Annapolis. And I know, unlike me, you were fortunately able to be at Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium for the Purple Gold game on Saturday. And looking forward to hearing what you have to say about a lot of these quarterbacks and wide receivers. So let's just go ahead and jump right into it. Obviously, Pirates are very fortunate to have a fifth-year starter due to COVID at quarterback and hometown hero in Holton Ahlers. So what were your thoughts on Holton on Saturday? Obviously, minimal snaps. And, he saw, just a few series. I know he threw 16 passes.
Yeah, I thought he looked really good. First of all, we talked about this before, Bubba. Physically, he looks as in shape as he has been since he's been at ECU. That leads me to think a couple of things. You know, obviously, he's truly committed to the program and doing everything he can personally to be a dynamic quarterback. But looking at him on Saturday, he just has a command out there in the field. Coach Houston and Coach Kirkpatrick always say he's like a coach on the field, but you can see it and. Is advanced and as confusion as Coach Harrell's defense is with pressures, you can just watch him taking his time, understanding what the play clock has on it or snap clock, and checking against the pressures and making sure the running backs and the O-line and everybody's on the same page. So he looked really sharp to me. And I noticed I sat on the offensive sideline for the entire game. And when he was warming up with Mason, He just had a little more spit on his ball than he's had in the past. It was just sharper and quicker. His release looked faster. It's like he had a tighter release. And I don't know if it's just something because it's spring and there wasn't the pressure of the game or what, but the ball was just jumping out of his hand really quick and with a nice tight spiral.
That's something with Holton now, him having played such a significant number of snaps. So going back to 2018 when he was – thrown into the fire, so to speak, and, much different quarterback than what he is now, and just as you would expect. But Holton, there's not a whole lot that he's not seen. I'm sure there's very little, to say the least, and then he goes against a defense like what we have with Blake Harrell bringing pressure from everywhere. So he continues to see a lot day in, day out in practice.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was texting with some buddies at the game and just explaining to them how difficult going against that defense is every day in practice. So just the odd fronts and the different pressure points. And you just never – I was anxious every time they were about to snap the ball just because you had no idea where the pressures were coming from. So there's a couple of things. I know we're talking about wide receivers and quarterbacks today, but that's also really, really good practice for our running backs and our offensive line, because you have to, everybody has to be singing off the same sheet of music or else you're going to get in trouble really quick against that defense. And Holton obviously has a great command. And the other thing that stands out to me, Bubba, is you can tell his teammates love him and respect him. And that's so important with a quarterback. And I know a lot of fans give him grief and, at times we all get frustrated with some of the throws and things like that. But at the end of the day, you can tell that whole program from the coaching staff to the the support group really likes Holton and supports him and it has his back.
Absolutely. That leadership element that you talk about, Holton, certainly, commands and, simply has the respect of those guys. You hear Rajay Harris or Keaton Mitchell and, the receivers talk about him in interviews and just how much respect they have for him and what he means to the team and the program. From your perspective, having been a coach for years and years, talk about Holton's maturation. You talk about him, missing on some of those simple throws at times, but I think you've certainly seen that become less and less. You see a little indecision at times last season, a game, UCF, and then also Houston, those games come to mind where he could have pulled it down and run for either touchdowns or first downs at critical junctures. But on the whole, I thought he did a pretty good job of, making good decisions and taking care of the football.
Yeah, you look at Holton in the past. One thing that I've noticed, and other folks have talked about this as well with me, and when the throws that are the head scratchers, he's always on his back foot, and a lot of times the reason is he's got immediate pressure or pressure already on top of him. That's going to lead to problems whether you're Steve Young or Holton Ahlers. I mean, you have to have that good balance point in your body position and your command of where the ball is going. Saturday, he just looked stout in the pocket. They were bringing the kitchen sink. And I can tell you right now, our defense is super fast, super quick. And nothing seemed to faze him. Going back to the running piece, and that's the piece that I really hope that we take the chains off of him early this season, let him take off when he sees a hole or a void there, whether in man coverage or they get a little sloppy with their zone coverage. And it sounded to me like from listening to Coach Kirkpatrick that towards the middle of the year, they really started coaching that even more to him and encouraging him to just take off and go. And I can promise you, the defense coordinator for NC State or ODU or Campbell or UCF, it doesn't matter. They would much rather play ECU without Holton or Mason or Ryan Stubblefield or Alex Flynn having the green light to go, but specifically Holton and Mason, because now you're playing 11-on-11 and somebody has to account for him, which just means somebody else is not going to be in coverage or bringing pressure.
Absolutely. And as far as the running piece of things, you take a look at Holton, over the course of his four-year career to date, he's run for approximately 1,200 yards, give or take. And, about half of that came in that 2018 season where he became the starter a few games in, taking over for Reed Herring. But that year, from a passing standpoint, really wasn't ready, you take a look at it. He's a true freshman, hadn't had the opportunity to get all those snaps and learn the offense to the level that he would need to, so on and so forth. And threw an awful lot of go routes to Trayvon Brown. All that resulted in 48% completion percentage last year, now right at 62%.
Right, and you remember when he broke out for us against the team that's in Chapel Hill. I won't say their name on here, but we all know who we're talking about. He was like a bull in a china shop, you might correct me on this, but I believe he's rushed for like 23 touchdowns so far in his career. Like you said, 1,200 some yards. I think he had just around 560 yards last year and 4 or 5 touchdowns, if you think about it from a game-to-game standpoint, he hasn't really been just let loose to run and run that zone read and make the backside five technique defensive end stay home or the backside outside linebacker hook curl player. And once that happens, it's going to be a different dynamic to defend. So, and I do believe he's really improved his passing, especially when he has the – he does a lot of things deep really well towards the sidelines, you know, between the hash marks and the numbers. And, you know, he had a really good rapport with Snead, who's no longer with us, unfortunately. But you could see Saturday that he's starting to really let the ball rip out of his hands. And I was just, like I said, I left the spring game thinking, hey, we've got two really good quarterbacks now, starting with Holton, and then you've got his backup, obviously Mason Garcia as well.
And to your point, as far as last season, it was 451 yards gained, but then all those sacks, and which is an area that certainly needs to improve, and I feel certain it will, it took him down to 202 net yards because of the way, you know, college football does things there. But 116 rushes, and obviously a lot of those were not designed rushes, so much pressure on the quarterback a year ago. And that's what, you know, when people were getting frustrated with Holton, I was like, well, the amount of pressure he's seeing, and I think you already referenced that, it was remarkable the numbers he put up last year and completing 62%, considering how much heat he had on him at times, you know, especially, you know, games like Cincinnati and against the better opponents on the schedule.
Yeah, and you got to remember, every time that happens, that you're typically playing some defense with a lot of dudes on it, guys that are big and can run and play
right.
Players. Yeah, I would love to see a statistical analysis by the analysts that work on staff and what's our record when Holton Ahlers rushes for 60 plus yards, 60 to 75 yards in a game. I bet you a dollar, it's really impressive. And it's not unreal.
I might have to go back and do that. That's a great point.
Yeah, because you watch the games we win and the games we really start clicking offensively, he rips off some runs. And some of the runs, I say when he rips off, some of them are five-yarders that really punish the defense, not just physically, but just it makes the defense do something different than just pin their ears back and bring pressure and just be able to play man. Because you sit in man and whoever's responsible for him misses them. Now you've got a problem because you've got a raging bull pirate right down the middle of the field who can really – we saw against Memphis. You know, he can make you pay the price for coming up and trying to make that tackle on him.
Certainly. And, you know, at one point he was probably between 230 and 40 pounds. Last year he had slimmed down to, I want to say, 220, 225. And most recently in an interview – I can't remember if it was after the spring game or one of the other scrimmages, he said 209 pounds. So definitely, you know, lean and mean, Holton Ahlers, and very interested to see, like you're saying, how we utilize his legs in 2022. And Coach Houston was just talking about how he's always had the straight line speed, but now, you know, he should have even better acceleration with that straight line speed. And then the lateral quickness is much better.
Absolutely. I want to ask Holton, you know, what did he do to lose that weight? Because I could certainly benefit from it myself. So he looked good. He looked trim and fit on the sidelines when he was standing there near us. So obviously he's committed to changing his body and doing everything he can to have his best year. You know, and I think he would say for his teammates and his team more than himself individually.
Behind Holton Ahlers, you have Mason Garcia, of course. We've heard time and again, you've heard this from Donnie Kirkpatrick as well as Coach Houston when they were hired in December of 2018. Mason Garcia was the number one target. He was the primary objective of that career class. And, you know, they were able to seal the deal and get him to Greenville. In 2020, he got a start against Navy because of Holton Ahlers COVID positive or, you know, false negative, if you will. So saw some glimpses in that game, but it was clear that he wasn't ready, and that's understandable given the situation. Then last year he had five games that he saw action in. It was virtually either goal line or short yard situations where he had a handful of plays, you know, read option plays and other things where Holton Ahlers would remain in the game out at wide receiver. So really nice to see right at 240 yards in the Purple Gold game on Saturday.
Yeah, so I think you're kind of breaking up there, but first of all, When you look at Mason Garcia, you could not draw or design a better looking person to play quarterback. He has an NFL body and physique now. The difference in Mason Garcia Saturday in the games I've watched him play, whether it's on TV or in person, was his eyes. When the pocket started moving, his eyes were downfield. He was looking to make the throw or see what the bracket of the coverage was to either take off and run, you know, like I said, or make the throw. In the past, if you remember his first start against Navy, as soon as he caught the snap, he would look one way and then his head went down. He's thinking about, how do I survive back here? And the same thing was happening last year when he was in the game. And I think he looked down a receiver against Temple and threw an interception there. But his eyes were in the right spot for a quarterback. And his eyes were taking his feet to a place where he could be successful and really make the defense have to account for him. So really impressed with Mason and the progress he's made, and, you know, excited for him because I don't think it was an easy road for him to either get to ECU or to get to where he is today. So really excited for watching him progress down the road and during the season.
Yeah, I was able to, in that Navy game that we were referencing back in 2020, was able to be in attendance that day, one of the few there. And like you said, and it was clear that he was giving up on the passing game. And, you know, if it wasn't there immediately, he was pulling it down and running it, wanting to use his legs. And you saw what he could do there. But you also saw, you know, how it's easy to take that away when the defense knows that's going to happen. But that day, a few of the completions he did have, I remember him, you know, throwing a 15 or 20 yard out route. It's like, man, that thing was a frozen rope. It took you back to, maybe David Garrard, like, just the way that thing was on the line.
Yeah. Every time he throws the ball, it's, you know, first thing that goes to my mind is, how did he just do that? And I feel bad for the receiver because it is, like you said, it's on a rope. It's a laser. And there's not a lot of movement in the ball besides just, like I said, just a really tight spiral, quick release. And he can make some throws physically. You know, I haven't seen all this, but watching him throw on Saturday, I feel like he can make some throws that are unique just based on his physical attributes. Once he gets settled in and starts trusting his eyes and trusting his reads and makes a decision really quick, he's going to be a really tough customer for defenses and defense coordinators.
In addition to Mason Garcia, I wanted to mention some of the other guys in that room. Ryan Stubblefield, was hoping we'd see more action from him on Saturday, but I guess in a sense, I'm not surprised on one hand because Coach Houston and staff made it very clear that they wanted Mason Garcia to get the bulk of the work. And it's, I guess, become very clear that he has really separated himself there. He was already the number two quarterback, and now he's really solidified that role going into the fall. And then, so you had Ryan Stubblefield, who Coach Houston's talked about his ability to, you know, be a bit of a gunslinger as well as make some things happen with his legs. He's only about, 5'10", 5'11", but he is 1 for 4 on Saturday. Just that single completion, and he did throw a pick. And then you also have Alex Flynn, who, and maybe this is unfair to say, but he seems to be more of that game manager, a guy that really knows the playbook and can go in there if need be and run the offense.
Yeah, so Stubblefield, what I like about him, first of all, is his feet. He's very slippery looking when he plays. Now, granted, he was the victim of a lot of pressure Saturday. So I don't feel like we've got a great sample size of him, but he moved around well in the pocket and he throws a really nice catchable looking ball. And people always say, what does that mean? Well, if you've coached, you can watch quarterbacks throw, and some quarterbacks can throw the ball really accurate, but it just doesn't seem catchable. And I don't know any other way to describe it, but some quarterbacks can lay it right in where it needs to be and it has a little touch on it. Then Alex Flynn, you know, he played in high school at Reynolds High School for Shane Laws, who's a really good head coach, but he had a chance to work under John Shoup who I got to know Coach Shoup years ago, and you couldn't have a better person working with quarterbacks. So definitely Alex is I hate to use the adjective serviceable, but I wouldn't have any problem if he ever got in a game. I would not sit there and hold my breath like we have in the past at times with some of the quarterbacks we've had to roll out there over the last 10 years. I feel like Alex and some of those other teams we've had where we struggled would have seen significant game time. He's just unfortunate. He came to ECU at a time where we started recruiting at a higher level than we had the previous 6 or 7 years at the position and other positions.
Yeah, I think that's a good take regarding Alex Flynn. I'm kind of surprised. I want to get your take on this at this point, you know, especially with Flynn, who's been there longer, it seems, you know, with Alex. We have seen this because you saw Brian Gagg move to tight end and you saw him enter the portal. But you knew when you had, you know, five guys on scholarship that wasn't going to last.
Yeah, I've heard through the grapevine that he's considered, and I could be wrong on this, but that he was pre-med or something and wanted to stay in the school, stay at East Carolina anyhow because of the med school and the progress he's making in the classroom. I could be wrong about that, but that's what the people I know closer to the program are saying, and that he really truly loves his teammates. And you know, he comes from a good family, good people. He worked in a good system. He did not have any negative body language on the sidelines at all. He was very supportive and does it, you know, very engaged with the game, helping wag the plays in from the sidelines to the quarterbacks and the receivers. So it could be one of these situations where the young man just loves the school and wants to keep competing and graduate and, you know, and maybe go to med school or something. But that's just what I'm hearing.
That would certainly make a lot of sense regarding his major. I was not aware of Alex's major, but that definitely makes a lot of sense. Let's shift over and talk about the wide receivers because don't want to shortchange them. I know in a little while you'll need to run, but let's jump right in and talk about the receivers. Obviously, you lose a ton of production with Tyler Snead, also a proven commodity in Audio Matosho, who had 40 catches a season ago. And then, you know, kind of the elephant in the room, C.J. Johnson, whether he will be back this fall. He's continuing to check boxes. So far, so good from everything we hear. But that is still TBD, to be determined with C.J. And he had 35 catches for 520 yards and a touchdown in 2021.
Right. So if you look at it from a number standpoint, and you and I were talking about this, with Audi and Snead, you lose about 1,350 yards roundabout and seven touchdowns. If you look at all the returning skill players on offense, now this is counting tight ends and running backs as well, you've got 152 catches for 1,880 yards and 14 touchdowns. Now that does include CJ, if he makes it back. If he doesn't make it back, we're looking at about 1,354 yards. So that would be, we would have returning what Audi and Tyler did alone amongst everybody. So that's concerning. So my hope is we get CJ back. Hopefully the young man does what it takes, and hopefully, you know, he can make it back. But you know, there's going to be I'm sure there's going to be a decision made by Coach Houston's leadership council, which weighs in heavily towards that decision if CJ continues down the right path. Because at the end of the day, Coach Houston and his staff understands that if the rest of the locker room's not bought in, you don't bring back anybody because it can be severely fracturing to the culture of the team. But I was, a lot of people reading the message boards and stuff were, you know, pretty negative about the receivers. Watching, considering the amount of time these young men have played, I was really impressed with some of the work they were doing and some of the things they were doing as far as route running and catching the football and, you know, being physical in the run game and things like that. So, you know, I'm always an eternal optimist, but I feel like we're going to keep marching along offensively and maybe even put up bigger numbers than we did last year.
With Tyler Snead, just over 200, 201 career catches to be exact. And, you know, one of the biggest things, in addition to all that production that you're missing with Tyler, is you referenced it earlier, Holton and Tyler being on the same page, you know, in those critical third and fourth down situations. You think back to the game that we attended up in Annapolis, we had to keep scoring, and you saw it time and again on third and fourth down. Remember, it was a fourth down play that tied the game, I believe it was, you know, going away from us, away from the field house end of the stadium, but they were toward the bank, and Holton hooked up with Tyler, and I remember Holton after the game saying that he honestly, you know, he was on his back. He didn't even see it. He just knew Tyler was supposed to be there, and he let it go, and it hit him in stride.
Yeah, was that the one over the middle? Because it seems like he did the same.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a of course, he was lined up in the slot, and then right. I think he was on the left side, and I think it was a quick slant or something of that nature.
Yeah, he always, you know, he's such a little water bug, right? You hope the New England Patriots pick him up because he'd be perfect for that offense and what they want to do. But he does that. He just he understands. You know, if you think about it from a game management standpoint, you've got to have that person that you can count on when the chips are against you. And you could tell that they had that chemistry. But going back, not to get jump back into the quarterbacks, thinking about Holton Ahlers' DNA and his makeup and thinking about Mason Garcia, his progression, and the fact that we've got an advanced quarterback room as far as years in the program now, I bet there's a lot more off-season Pascal-y and skill work and route running than even in the past. I just know that Holton, you know, he's not going to leave anything, any stone unturned as far as making sure he gets this his chemistry with the team. But I saw a couple young men who reminded me of Tyler Snead on Saturday. You know, not quite as quick necessarily, but guys that just reminded me of Snead and the way they just seem to catch everything. So excited about them as well.
Losing so much production between Snead and Omotosho. I mentioned the 201 catches for Snead, 60 plus for Audie during his Pirate career. So that made it, you know, very clear that this staff needed to go to the transfer portal to replace some of that production. And yes, you have plenty of unproven talent, but you needed guys that had done it before. So you bring in guys like Isaiah Winstead from Toledo, and then also Jalen Johnson from Georgia. Winstead began his career at Norfolk State, and then, you know, played 2 years at Toledo as well. Between those two stops, had a right at 150 catches. I think it was 83 at Norfolk State and 63 at Toledo.
Yeah, those are good numbers. If we can plug in something close to 80 catches from Mr. Winstead this year, the train will be rolling. Because at that point, you start opening up that production that you got from Snead, and you know somebody else is going to step up. And then you guys have already covered it, but just having Ryan Jones and Shane Calhoun at the tight end slash wide and H-back positions, and then even Aaron Jarman, who impressed me on Saturday too with his route running compared to what he was a year ago, it's going to create problems. And the biggest reason I say that is, now you've got Mitchell, Harris, and Pop McKay back there at running back. So you got to kind of pick your poison at that point, especially with a veteran offensive line. But I feel like Taji Hudson and Josh Murphy and Kerry King, and you mix those guys in, and Brock Spalding and Macy O'Donnell's, you've got a good group of folks right there. Even if CJ doesn't make it back, that I feel like we can have a serviceable offense and put some points on the board.
One of the comparisons I made, and this is just off watching the little film that I have from Toledo as well as Norfolk State, of Isaiah Winstead, with his size, 6'3", 210 pounds, he seems to, just the way he moves and so forth, he reminds me of Trayvon Brown, a very big wide receiver. And also, I wanted to mention, as far as Jalen Johnson, yes, he did not get many targets at Georgia with all the playmakers they had on that roster and the tremendous talent that Kirby Smart and staff had assembled. But I think he's going to definitely be kind of at least a 35 to 40 catch guy. We shall see. But I could see him being like an Audie Omotosho, maybe more.
Yeah, absolutely. And you think about his size, you got two additions that bring tremendous amount of length to the receiver room. I've read the same things you have about, well, he didn't play that much at Georgia. He started five games last year on the national championship team, an SEC team. Anytime you – if you get to play kickoff coverage for an SEC team, you're a player. And there's no doubt that he was probably just buried on a deep wide receiver room. He's got talent. You watch the practice tape. He runs great routes. His stems are good. He gets out of the breaks quick. Like I said, the size. And my understanding is one of his biggest attributes is his ability to block. And that's so critical too. So I'm excited about having Isaiah join the team. And I was disappointed, to say the least, that Jalen was out. I think he's been nicked up during spring ball. But my understanding from some folks close to the program is the week that he was out there, he stood out as far as a maturity level and just his effort and his championship approach to practice and his work ethic. So,
yeah, you are correct. You know, of course, per the coaches, he was nursing that hamstring, so he did miss at least about half of spring ball, if not two-thirds of it. But in the 5 to 7 or so practices that he did see, that he was everything that they had anticipated and, you know, wanted him to be in terms of work ethic and talent when they brought him in from the portal from Georgia. Moving on and taking a look at some of these guys, one of the guys you've already mentioned, but I wanted you to hone in on a little bit more, and that's Josh Murphy, high school teammate of Mason Garcia down at Carolina Forest High School, right outside of Myrtle Beach. But talk about Josh. From the way you describe him and just looking at his height and weight, he sounds a lot like a Blake Prohl.
Yeah, he does. That's exactly who he reminds me of. He's just one of these guys, when you watch him, he's super competitive. And like I told you, Bubba, before, he just catches everything. So you're not going to see, I don't think over the next years, and he's a freshman on the roster right now. I think he's got 4 years of a reliable person. When the ball goes in the air, Pirate Nation goes, he's going to catch that football, as opposed to wondering, okay, is this going to be a drop? Is this going to be this? Is he going to break the route off early? He just has that niche and that ability to just, he just reeks of somebody who does not drop the football. And he looked, his hands look like glue on Saturday. So excited about him.
Also, wanted to go back to a somewhat proven commodity. We've seen it from this guy. You think about the pass from Tyler Snead that he caught last year against South Carolina. What a awesome play that was to start off that game against the Gamecocks. And then you think back to Mike Houston's first season when we lit up SMU down in Dallas, Holton hitting this guy in stride. And I'm of course, talking about Josiah Hatfield, North Carolina product. Over the course of his career, he has between 35 and 40 catches. We just need to see it with more consistency.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, I think he played at Southern Alamance there in the Burlington area.
Yeah, you are correct on that.
Yeah, so he has speed and he has good hands. I just think Josiah just got to – he's got to create that confidence level that we saw when he lit up SMU in Dallas like a Christmas tree. He can be unguardable if he – is a threat to catch the football. And he has tremendous talent. He can take the top off of defense. I would love to see him get one or two jet sweeps a game, continue with that, or reverse passes and things like that. And so we just hope that, like everybody else, I hope that he develops that confidence that matches his ability. And if he does, again, I'm an eternal optimist here, especially with EC football. If he does, it's going to be a hell on a lot of the teams we play because he has that type of speed.
And he had, I think it was 3 or 4 catches for maybe 50 or 60 yards late in that Cincinnati game and the regular season finale and what ended up being the season finale, unfortunately. But in that game against the Bearcats, I know he made a competitive catch on a fade ball right there in front of the Cincinnati bench, and then also caught a ball on a slant or skinny post and made a nice catch and run.
Yeah, and you got to think about too who he's playing against there.
Exactly, some of the best DBs in the country.
Yeah, they look like the Seattle Seahawks back there from the Super Bowl years with they've got guys playing corner who look like defensive ends for a lot of schools. I mean, they're just freaks. So if he does that confidence of those plays carry forward, I hope so for Josiah, and I hope so for the offense, because if it does, he just has that different shake about him, kind of like Keaton. He can, Josiah could be one of those guys that when the ball goes in the air and he's in the route, that Pirate Nation knows Dowdy Ficklin's about to become electric because he has that type of ability.
Some other guys, I know you referenced Kerry King and a lot of the guys that are very talented but haven't seen time yet. And Kerry King was one of those, even going back to last year, that was a, quote, spring darling that we often hear. So hopefully we'll see that translate to the field in the fall. Some guys I don't think we've touched on yet that I wanted to get your take before we wrap this up. Ray Rose, the North Carolina transfer, North Carolina product, high school quarterback at South Point, a very tradition-rich high school program. And then you also have a guy in Macy O'Donnell who's a walk-on and earned a scholarship.
Yeah, so I was really impressed with Kerry King. And I believe he had some big catches in the spring scrimmage last year as well. He also, my understanding is he has top end speed as well. He seemed to catch the ball well, and it was, it did not look clunky when he made the catches. So hopefully he can continue to grow and add a few pounds to his body. He's a little lean right now, but it's hard to tell from the bleachers really what their makeup is, but he looks a little thin, but he ran good routes. He was very competitive. He was on the ones going against the ones. So obviously he was playing best on best football. So I was impressed with him. I did not get a chance to see a lot of Ray Rose. I know I heard a lot of good things the second half of the year about him on special teams and really maturing his approach to being a football player and a Division I athlete. Hopefully that carries forward. I was hoping to get to see him in the game. Obviously a tremendous athlete as well. Like you said, I think he played quarterback in a flex bone triple option offense at Belmont South Point. And then, Macy O'Donnell, former walk-on, he also was not dressed out for the game. It's tough because every day they miss, they're missing those reps. And when you get a chance to go in a game situation where it's good versus good, ones-on-ones against that defense, you're just going to continue to get better, which makes your team better. So it's, as a fan now, it's frustrating when you don't see those guys out there dressed up participating, but you know that in Coach Houston's program, if they could go, they would go. And there's no, just sandbagging, in my opinion, on the sidelines, because you just don't feel like you're in a good situation or something like that. Negative.
Also wanted to ask you or mention TJ Lockley. Obviously he entered the transfer portal. He'd been pretty highly regarded, but for a variety of reasons, apparently was just not working out. And I think he had some reasons in addition to football, perhaps, that he wanted to transfer back. I believe he was from Florida. And then you had Jonathan Johnson also enter the portal. You had a position change of sorts, or at least a different role within the position for Tyler Savage. So what do you see out of him on Saturday? And this is something that did not surprise me after seeing him, such a large receiver, 6'3", 225 pounds. Apparently, we're going to use him in more of a tight end role. So was he being used in the spring game more like Shane Calhoun or Ryan Jones?
Yeah, he was. He was. So you think about it, with Calhoun, with Ryan Jones, Tyler Savage, and then who's the freshman tight end, he's not quite, those guys look more like big receivers. So that's an inside receiver matchup issue right there for how you're going to defend that. The best thing I can say about that, Bubba, is 3 or 4 years ago, I didn't even like going watching the Pirate Walk because I would look at our team and I just would say, gosh, we do not look like an AAC or much less a Division One football team. And that's no disrespect to the players at the time. It just was a different time.
Now, sorry to cut you off, but to elaborate on your point, my dad and I, we said the same thing. It was Mike Houston's first home game against Gardner Webb. After the team came by, me and my dad just looked at each other and I said, holy cow, we're tiny.
Yeah, we are. But now we got what we call bus guys. We've got a bunch of guys that we could walk off the bus first and people go, uh-oh, as soon as they do. And Tyler Savage is one of those guys because you can look at him. He's just a physical specimen. Yeah, I've never seen him run in person or do agility drills. But I tell you what, he would sit near the front of the bus if I was the I was in charge of who sits on the bus on the offensive team. And you put him and Ryan Jones out there. He runs well, in my opinion, for his size. He seems to have a little wiggle in his hips. There's nothing but the sky's the limit for him. I mean, he's a sophomore right now in the program. So he's still got, 3 years, and he continues to develop under Big John. And, I think he had a catch or two in the game Saturday, maybe, if I remember correctly. But I think he's in the right spot. And we can get really, really creative with him. And then the speed of Keaton Mitchell. People were talking about the running some 22 personnel the other day. If you put Tyler Savage out there with Ryan Jones in the slot and you put Mitchell and Harris back there as the two backs in the backfield at the same time, you've got some issues there on how you're going to defend that just based on body types and the ability to run with the football or get open and create matchup issues. So I'm excited about seeing his development.
And the last guy I want to mention, Walter Simmons, came in as a dual threat quarterback, and we knew he had made the position change over to wide receiver. And Coach Houston described him as having elite feet. Mm-hmm. I was very interested to see if we may use him in maybe sort of a Dwayne Harris role this fall, but we're hearing that he may be or is entering the transfer portal.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. He was another guy in street clothes on Saturday, and I'd love to see him run and run routes because you look at Taji Hudson's development since moving to receiver. Taji Hudson's going to contribute this year. I would bet good money that Taji has at least 20 to 25 catches, if not more, just watching him play on Saturday. Having guys like Walter Simmons and that size and that ability to run and ability to make people miss at receiver would be invaluable. But like you said, the rumor mill is that he's probably hitting the portal because it sounds like he and his family feel like his best position is quarterback. You know what? If that's the case, I wish him the best, and we'll support him no matter where he goes. But I'd hate to lose an athlete like that from East Carolina.
Yeah, no doubt. I figured that was the position change that, was leading him to enter the transfer portal, much like Brian Gagg, even though he obviously gave a tight end longer than Walter did receiver. You can't blame him. Kid feels like he's a quarterback, then certainly wish him all the best. And, here's hoping that he gets that opportunity and can – make things happen at his new school and be interesting to see where he ends up, whether it's another FBS program or maybe he transfers down to a FCS program. And I think he's originally from Georgia, so who knows? Maybe he goes to – I'm just throwing out names here, not knowing what these schools run necessarily. I think Kennesaw State was an option program. Maybe he goes somewhere like that.
Yeah, I think Simmons is actually from Florida. I could be wrong though, but it would be interesting to see where he goes.
He's
definitely athletic. I could be wrong though. I just seems like I remember him coming out of Florida and having some schools that I was surprised that he chose us over.
I think you're right on that. Think you're right.
Yeah. Anytime I tough.
Yeah. Sorry, I had some lag there. Didn't mean to step on you, but really appreciate your time this afternoon. I've enjoyed talking Pirate football with you, specifically the quarterbacks and wide receivers, and I look forward to having you back on very soon and talking some more Pirate football.
Hey, thanks, Bubba. I enjoyed it. It's anytime we can talk ECU football, you know, I'm game for that. And I'm a big fan of the podcast, supporting the Pirates, and looking forward to this season and hanging out a little bit and tailgating and enjoying some big victories, especially the September 3rd when we light it up against NC State.
No doubt. That Pirate fans is Jason Tindall. I'm Bob Rosenbaum. We appreciate everyone tuning in. Be sure to like and follow us on Facebook, subscribe on our YouTube channel, and, you know, give us a like and comment wherever you tune into the show. As always, we appreciate your listenership, and we'll talk to you real soon. Go Pirates.